Hello and welcome to the Coffee and Podcast. We are on a quest to cultivate freedom for victims of human trafficking, all while drinking really great coffee. I'm your host, Philip Klayman. I'm one of the co-founders of Three Tree Coffee in Statesboro, Georgia. And on today's show, I'm really excited to have Z, who's the co-founder of an adventure company that uses tourism to end human trafficking. Can mountain biking and rock climbing be used to fight exploitation? I think we're going to find out today. I do want to let you know that we're not going to be using the company name today, just for security reasons and out of sensitivity for that. And also on these types of episodes, we talk about more sensitive topics about human trafficking. So we just encourage listener discretion and that you be ready to listen to things like that. Well, Z, I'm super excited to have you on the show today. If you could please just tell us a little bit more about your life before the tourism company. Where are you from and what sort of upbringing did you have?
Thank you, Phyllis, for inviting me in this podcast. Privileged to share our story. For me, I grew up in a normal, typical village in Nepal. The village of around 50 or 60, playing with muds and playing with mountains and rivers and forests and jungles. That's how I grew up. And when I was growing up, Nepal is very famous for Mount Everest, having the tallest mountain in the whole world. And so I always wanted to just go and climb some kind of mountains in my life. And because of that, I always loved adventure. I always loved trekking and mountain climbing. And when I heard about trafficking and how tourism can be one of the key solution to solve the issue in some of the major places, I was very keen to learn how to make that happen through tourism. And so that's how I kind of got involved into tourism and adventure, basically.
Wow. So was that kind of common among people that you grew up with? Did a lot of the kids kind of grow up craving adventure, or was that unique to you?
I think I would say unique to me. Most of the kids in my country who grows up, it's kind of climbing mountains up and down is kind of their normal life, but really climbing higher mountains sometimes can be hard for some people. So for me it's life, and I wanted to climb high mountains, have more adventure in life. And kind of, I would say out of my 100 friends, only probably 2 or 3 of them are involved in tourism. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and so how did your family feel about this? Did they kind of think it was crazy that you always wanted to go climb mountains, or did you have siblings that thought that was weird, or was it not that strange to them?
It was strange to them, basically, because, it's very remote village. Climbing mountain was kind of a stupid thing for people, hard thing for people. My parents were scared, of course. They felt, of course, security issues when I was trying to, involved with, climbing and trekking, in the mountains. So it is not easy for my parents to allow me, for sure.
Yeah. So then what led you to start the adventure company? I mean, clearly you just craved adventure, liked adventure, but specifically, why start a company around that?
So, when I was growing up, Nepal is, although we have a lot of mountains, Nepal has lack of unemployment. It's pretty high, I would say. Right now, after COVID, they say, out of 100 people, only 50 people would have a job. And so me being an entrepreneur, trying to see the resources in Nepal, mountains are always there. We have highest mountain. Eight highest mountain in the world is in Nepal out of 10. And, you know, our cultures and people are amazing. And so also tourism, you know, creates like 3 to 5 jobs off revenue when one tourist comes to Nepal. And so there was a lot of resources, and the key information that really helped me, you know, decide to be involved in tourism, not just adventure part, but also as a business. But also because lack of unemployment in Nepal, it's one of the major causes for a lot of human exploitation in the country, from trafficking to sex slavery to, you know, bonded laborers, you know, and so bonded slaves as well in many places. And so creating a job was one of the major sustainable solutions to help stop the human exploitation and trafficking. And that is why I was like, you know, a lot of adventure, it creates jobs, it creates income, and also it helps stop exploitation. I mean, like, what can be better than that? And so at the same time, you could see a lot of tourists coming to Nepal. A lot of people just enjoy the nation, trek to Mount Everest, base camp, all of the other base camps in the country. But then, you know, they just enjoy the country. And the concept was, why we not create an opportunity for those tourists to do something that helps the villages, helps the poor people in the villages by, you know, they coming and enjoying the nation. And so basically it started with a travel with a purpose. Or asking our clients to do travel very differently than it's been done for, you know, normally for many years. And so some of this information really led me to, you know, do tourism as a social enterprise. Hmm.
So you saw this problem of unemployment, and I think you said 50% after COVID. Has this always been an issue even before COVID, or was it really brought on by the global pandemic?
Even before COVID, people, you know, in reality say around, you know, out of 135 to 40 people doesn't have a job. So it's the whole country has less, you know, employment in the country. So it's not just after COVID, you know, even before COVID. It's been there for quite a long time, I would say.
Yeah. So you have this passion of adventure, and then you saw this problem of unemployment, and you said, well, let's do something about it. Let's start a company. And you've mentioned people being exploited quite a bit, specifically through various forms of human trafficking. What is it? How does this come about? I mean, do people just walk through the villages? Is it abductions? Is it deception? Help us understand a little bit better about how are some of these people exploited.
So when you're talking about especially trafficking, you know, it's been quite a long time that's been here in the country. You're talking about almost a century, actually century plus history on trafficking in the country. In the beginning, when a lot of these girls were sold, most of them were sold a fake, you know, hope. Because these girls in the villages are very naive people, gullible people. And so they used to believe anyone who comes to the village showing them hope. So a lot of these traffickers used to just say, you know, I'm going to take you out of the village to the city. You'll have good education. You'll have good jobs. You'll have a good future. Some of the simple story for them to, you know, convince these girls to come with them would be, you know, we would give you some good clothes, you'll have nice phones, nice shoes, you know, you can have makeups and some jewelry stuff. And so these girls are very naive, so they would just follow the trafficker. And then, you know, once they end up in brothels, they would not even know they were trafficked. And there are some cases in those days also, you know, being kidnapped, also drugged, you know, just sold to these places in many ways. After many years of trafficking, these days it's a little bit different than that because of the awareness of trafficking. These days, what happens is people go in in hope for saying, you know, they will get a job or get a visa in other countries. But then when they end up in, say, other countries, they would literally, you know, be sold, because they're going to grab their passport and then sell them to whoever the client or customer is. And so before, most of these girls used to, you know, say 90% girls used to end up in India. That's where most of the girls used to end up. But last, say, 5-6 years, the girls has been scattered all around the world, from China to Africa to Arabian countries, getting sold and trafficked. So the scenario before and now is a little bit different, but that's how a lot of these girls get trafficked.
So a lot of deception, right? A lot of giving a false hope of something better. And then once they're kind of in a vulnerable situation, whether it's maybe across a border or not within their village or their family, they're exploited. Their passport's taken, or they're forced to do things they don't want to do. And you've brought up unemployment, and I want to just touch on that one more time, because I just want to know, is that, why do you think that's an issue that has been maybe unique to Nepal for some time? Do you have any thoughts on why is there such high unemployment? If that's one of the factors that results in this, why is there such high unemployment?
I would say, you know, the major, there are a few big reasons on this. The one major one is basically we have never had a stable government for last, let's say, 20 years. So the government has been changing every 6 months to a year. And nothing happens because of that. And you're talking about, you know, decades, not few years. And so the country's economy is basically going down rather than going up. So, you know, creating jobs, or especially if the government is not stable, then most of the businesses will not be stable, because market is so unstable because of the government. And of course, creating job is, you know, one big problem because of that. The other reason is Nepal is very, you know, it's a third world country, so highly dependent on aid. You know, when we were doing research in 2011, our national, you know, development budget used to be aid. And it, the aid donations budget would be around 60-70%. And so when those money comes in to the country, then the whole government gets free money, and it just doesn't end up in the project. It just goes into some people's, the politicians. And so it's kind of sad because of that. So the aid, or you know, the how the aid was used, I would say, you know, aid itself is not a problem, but the how it was used in the whole country has made the whole country more dependent to some of these big aid organizations. You're talking about the whole nation right now. You know, there are, of course, a lot of other aid organizations doing other small social works. But the whole country being dependent to someone else is one of the big issues as well, I would say. So it's about how aid was used to help the nation has actually hurt the nation in the long run. And that's why there is a lot of unemployment, I would say. And so past few years, you know, it's slowly changing, but, you know, you're talking about hurting the nation for decades. And so recovering and restoring the mentality is you're talking about generation, not a few years. And so there is a, you know, I think the two of those are big reasons. But of course, our education system is also not that great. That is also one of the major part of it. And so, yeah, I think those are a few reasons I would say there for unemployment in the country.
Yeah, so 60-70% aid. Boy, that is a big chunk. And so I guess my next question would be, you know, for someone that grows up in Nepal, what is the big break opportunity when it comes to a job? Like, is there a certain industry where it's like, oh, that's a great place to be? Or is it in the government? Because maybe there's corruption and that's where all the money stays. I mean, what is the big break, the big move that someone in Nepal can make to get a good job before your company?
The big ones, force government jobs, because, you know, it gives them good facilities and, you know, allowances and stuff. And then people want to have jobs in banks, some big companies. Usually people don't want to have a job in a billionaire's business because that's where they get paid less and they don't get facilities. The law enforcement in our country on jobs, employment, and taxes is very not good. And so, it's that, you know, people want to get jobs in those places, like armies or, you know, being a cop, any jobs in the government, banks, kind of a dream for people. Other places are a little bit less. Chances would be, you know, want to be an air hostess, being a doctor and engineer, those kind of stuff. But you have to work hard for those things. But just getting a normal job would be government places, I would say.
All right. So there's this problem that you've shared, right? High unemployment. It's resulting in a lot of exploitation in terms of false jobs, deception, forced labor, you know, forced sex trafficking, things like that. So now let's turn the attention to your company. What are you doing to try and solve that through your adventure company?
So for our tourism company, trafficking is a non-issue, and there are a lot of people trying to fight it, right? You're talking about people in brothels in India that are trying to rescue these girls from the brothel as much as possible. There are a lot of the organization patrolling the Nepal and India border where, the girls cross to India because they don't need a visa. It's a free pass. And so there are a lot of other organization in the city. They have shelter homes for these rescued girls. When we were doing research about what's not being done, a lot of these organization were not going where the girls were coming from. You're talking about a very remote village, very isolated village where you'd see sometimes even people are still living in caves sometimes, very remote places. And they got to hike at least a day to reach some of these villages. And so for our company, we said we want to prevent right when it happens. We want to give these girls who are in the villages have a different future, not end up in brothels or get exploited. And for us as a tourism company, what we do is we go and develop these remote areas to be a tourism destination, bringing tourists into their village to have an alternative income to their trafficking income that they have been having for decades. Because tourism income is one of the income that makes sense for these villagers to have enough so that they would not sell their daughters or wives or sisters. And so for us as a travel company, we majorly go and develop this village as a tourism village. We go and make homestays. Homestays is like, Airbnb. You're living with a family, you're eating their food, you're sleeping with them, having that cross-cultural experience for people. And also at the same time, you're bringing income so that they would not sell their daughters is the idea. So what we do is we do prevent. It's like this story we like to tell. There were these dead bodies floating in the river, and then a lot of the good people were just, pulling these dead bodies and burying them or burning them. But then this kid comes in, so why are these people dying? I mean, there must be a reason. And so he decides to find out a reason, a cause that was killing these people. And so he packs his bag, a tent and food on his backpack, hikes to this mountain village for days. and finds out where these people are dying from and why they were dying from. And so it usually is very simple causes that was not addressed. And so he basically brings simple medicines like Tylenol or, say, you know, some antibiotics and stuff like that. And then these people stop dying, you know? And so guess what happens at the end is you will not see these dead bodies in the river anymore. And so that's what 514 does. We want to go to this mountain village where most of these girls are coming from, make it a tourism destination so that hundreds of tourists can go, bring income, so that you would not see the flow of girls to these other countries. And so that's what we do as a company.
Amazing. So you're going to the source, right? You're going right to where it initially happens to try and prevent it from getting to the place where they're stuck, they're trapped in other countries, or even in the same country. About how many people do you employ?
We have around 35 to 40 people.
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time? It glitched a little bit.
We have around 40 people, full-time and wow. Part-time.
Okay. And when did you start this company?
We started this company in 2011.
Amazing. So you've been able you currently employ 40 people. I'm sure you've been able to help a lot more since 2011. My next question would be, was it difficult starting a company in Nepal? I mean, I imagine with some of the government corruption, was that difficult? Was it not? Was it received well? What was that journey like?
I think, you know, when we were trying this idea, we really didn't know it would work because we were going into this village where most of the girls were gone and controlled by mafias and, you know, traffickers and all that. So we actually were not sure. I think government part was not a problem, I would say, but the problem was just the idea of going to the source and trying to stop right there because it's just not safe. And so starting a company was, I wouldn't say it was hard. I think getting a client who can come with us was definitely hard. And still hard because, you know, like we can't really say the name of the company publicly and tell them what we do as a company. We stand at just a travel company online, you know, and people just want to come with us as a trekking company. But when we share our vision and what we do, you know, face to face, it's kind of stunning for our clients. But that's what we do, you know. That's what our commitment is, to go to these villages. And so I wouldn't, you know, getting a client was hard as a tourism company, but just starting a company starting a company is not hard. Running a company and sustaining is, I think, the hard part is.
Absolutely. Well, it's also probably difficult to market a company that you have to be somewhat secret about, right? I mean, that's a very difficult challenge, is that the good work you're doing, you almost have to hide a little bit because of the security reasons. And that makes it a little more difficult just to market it, right? Because it's not just a tourism company. And even though it seems like you'll do some great tourism, there's so much more happening that sadly, it's just difficult to market because of the secrecy or just because of the security reasons.
Yep.
So then, you know, what kind of activities do you guide people on? So let's say someone signed up to come on an adventure tourism trek. You know, what sort of adventures do y'all do?
We actually operate all kind of adventures. We do trekking. If you want to climb mountains, if you want to climb Mount Everest, then, you know, we can help you climb Mount Everest too. Any base camp trek, we organize that. If you want to helicopter to Mount Everest base camp, we do that too. If you want to do a jungle safari in the south, you know, ride elephants and do some boating, we can organize that too. So you just have to name what kind of adventure you want to do in Nepal, and then we'll make it happen for you. But primarily, we want to take tourists in these villages where we work, so that we can, you know, reach the destination as a company to make sure this girl stays there. So we primarily take tourists to these villages rather than going to some, say, developed trails or that's where a lot of the tourists go. So we kind of, you know, want to do the trek or the adventure that's off the beaten path rather than, you know, where everyone goes. So taking to the village primarily is our goal, but people want to do other stuff, then why not? Sure, let's do it, because, you know, you also have to sustain the business, not just, you know, do the work in the village too. And so, but we as a company, we just host, operate any adventure, you name it. So, yeah.
How do the people in the villages receive this? Are they excited to have the group of tourists coming in and to give the homestay?
So most of these villages, you know, the local people love us. You know, they want tourists to come and stay in their homes. They love interacting with them, feeding them, taking care of them. But then the traffickers who is next door doesn't like what we do because we're bringing change, bringing tourists. And so, yeah, I mean, local people loves us, but the traffickers, of course, doesn't love us because sometimes, most of the time, the traffickers are from the village, you know, they're not from the city. And so that's kind of the risk. And that is why we don't tell people the name of the company, because we go as a tourism company, as a business face, not as a trafficking stopping organization. We just go and say, hey, we're just here to bring tourists. We want to bring tourists to our village and bring income. We never say we're there to stop trafficking. Because what we believe is, you know, if there is income alternative for these people, or, you know, if these people are educated and if they know how to value their girls and their wives, you know, you don't have to even say name trafficking. It just goes away by itself.
Yeah, you're
so, yeah.
Well, you're clearly doing an amazing work just bringing sustainable employment. That's an alternative to some of these exploitative situations. Do you feel like it also gives opportunities for education and prevention specifically regarding Indian human trafficking? Do you or other people in the organization get to have conversations with people in the village saying, hey, you need to be careful about some of these situations that sound too good to be true?
We, you know, to be honest, a lot of these, you know, it's been happening for decades. So there will be very few people who doesn't know that their girls are being trafficked or sold or working in these brothels. It's been a common knowledge. They just do it because they've been doing for years and years. It's like it's already been a culture or a tradition rather than they do it occasionally. So when we go there, you know, we don't have to talk to them about trafficking much. They know what they're doing. We just go there, you know, we do talk, but then we don't talk publicly about trafficking and say, don't do that and don't do this. We usually, you know, do it very privately while we are having coffee or having dinner. And if they want to talk about it, then we talk. Otherwise, we don't talk about it. Since it's a very public knowledge and they know what, you know, what happens there. So, but we kind of keep our eyes on to see who is there and who is not. And, you know, try to give them that, the worldviews that say, oh, you know, you gotta send your kids to school. Your daughters to school, or you gotta give them, you know, education and jobs, you know, value them, so beautiful. So trying to change their worldview so that they would not sell it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think that's incredible that you get those opportunities to speak value into human life, right? I mean, that's, people are a work of art, and having an opportunity to just even speak into that sort of worldview, that sort of thinking of, man, we should value the human life, especially our own families, I think is incredible.
So talking about worldview, I think, Philip, what's important in talking about the nation is Nepal is very dominated society. Male dominated society. And so the country doesn't give value to girls much. Especially in the remote villages. We have some very harsh saying for the daughters. If you have a daughter, then she's like a burden to your family. If you invest in daughters, then it's like you're watering other men's garden because she's going to get old and get married to their husbands and they're no use for the family. And so, you know, the major, big, big hospitals also, you know, when a girl is pregnant, then when they want to know the gender, they will have a big sign saying, please don't ask the gender, because a high probability, if it is a girl, then, you know, a baby will be aborted. And so these kind of the values for the ladies or the girls or the females has to be changed to make sure that they don't do it. And that is why when we talk with them, we try to give them a different worldview of love and respect to these girls as humans so that they would, you know, respect them. One of the other worldview is, you know, when you have a first menstruation, then it's taken as a curse rather than it's a natural process for any girl to have menstruation. And so they're basically kept out of the house usually, you know, seen as unholy and unclean. And then some girls even die out there, you know, in animal stables sometimes. And so because of these worldview is one of the cause also is, you know, they get trafficked easily because they're already a burden. And so for father who usually takes the decision, it's an easy decision for him to just say, no, that's okay, I'm getting money kind of thing. And so changing the worldview is very hard. You know, prevention itself is already hard. And so changing worldview takes a generation usually. But once it is changed, you gotta understand this also is that their whole generation is also changed, you know. So it's just not talking about a few years, you're talking about a whole generation being transformed.
So it's a slow work, but it's a big work. It has big ramifications. And it makes me think about, I think it's a Chinese proverb that says the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time to plant a tree is today, right? The thinking of it's a long work. It takes time. It's not a weed that's going to come up quickly. It's going to take time to grow this tree, but it's going to pay a lot of dividends. It's going to make a bigger change if it's done the right way. As I hear you share about all this, It's dense stuff. It's heavy stuff. There's a lot of harsh views towards women. There's exploitation. There's unemployment. There's corruption. There's local village control and corruption, not just even in the bigger government. My question to you, Z, is how do you stay hopeful in the midst of this issue, knowing it's a long-term game? How do you keep hope in the midst of all this, knowing that you're going to see change?
I think, you know, when you work in these villages, I mean, we have been doing this work for last, you know, 12, 13 years, right? And so when we go into these villages, so let's say when we found this village for the first time, you're talking about this very remote village. And this village was, you know, in a bad situation, you would not see any girls in between ages 5 to 40 because most of them are gone. You would not even see a girl who is a marriageable age. A guy has to hike hours to find a wife. You could even see girls being helicoptered out. You would even see that the village is very famous as a prostitute village because, you know, they've been selling girls. It's very controlled by mafia, you know, lots of these social organizations, usually sometimes Christians trying to bring change in this village, they're all kicked out because these mafias doesn't want them to come in and change the worldview of the local people or the villagers. And so when we started going into this village for the first time, you know, we were also not sure that it was safe for us to go because we just didn't know they were deceptors. But then the local people liked us, you know, and then, you know, we said, oh, that's actually good. The trafficker didn't like us and they still don't like us. And when we were, you know, I still remember the first team that we took in 11, and then the locals were saying, you know, pointing out some of these girls and saying, you know, her sister was sold and is on the line to get sold in 6 months to a year. And they're basically counting every girl, you know, getting sold. And they're on the line to just go to India and be a prostitute. And so we stopped there and said, you know, we got to keep coming and make sure that this girl stays there. And so after many years of hard work, you know, we can see these girls that we saw for so many years. We see these girls getting married now after 12, 13 years. Instead of not seeing any girls, you know, 12 years back, now you can see hundreds of girls going to school, getting educated, enjoying their villas. Now these girls have a different future because we, you know, as a tourism company, we took that risk 12 years back. People used to, you know, hate us going to this village, you know, even spit at us, yell at us and saying, why are you going to this filthy village? But then now, after so many years of work, now people are like, hey, would you like to come to our village and, you know, bring tourists as well? We want to see the change in our villages as well. We want to make sure our girl stays and have good income. And, you know, they want us more rather than not go to the village, you know. They want to go to the village now. They want to see what's happening in the village through tourism. And then also a lot of the young youth guys also want to make sure that their sisters now not get sold, you know. And so they just declared their whole village as a trafficking-free zone and, you know, and told the villagers, hey, we're not going to sell our daughters and sisters. And so some of these impact and transformation we see through tourism is just amazing, you know. And because of these kind of stories, when these youth take this initiative to declare their area the trafficking free zone, when we go to these villages doing, you know, bringing tourists and doing projects, we see these girls growing up and laughing and smiling. You know, these are different stories, you know. They could have been in a hell in India or some other places in the world, but now they have a different future. And that keeps us, you know, doing the hard work because we know that it's not the end. There's a lot of work still to be done, and we want to keep pushing, keep going until it's just, you know, there's everyone's there and just trafficking just goes away for forever. And so for us, it's, you know, these stories keeps us, you know, saying, you know, it's hard. It's not easy. But, you know, I mean, what's the best way to live life and, you know, change this, you know, this is the best way. You know? It's totally worth it. And so that's why we are still taking a lot of risk and we still go and, you know, make sure that this growth stays there. So, yeah.
That's incredible. We have a saying at Three Tree. It's actually a culture point. It says changing people's worlds. And kind of the thought behind it is we don't think we can change the whole world, but we know we can change someone's world, right? Kind of that one person at a time approach. And it's just amazing to hear the people you've impacted and seeing this generational change come because of you doing this work and providing great jobs, bringing great income and bringing great awareness to these villages. And so it's just been awesome to hear more about it. Let's end with one more kind of fun question just to kind of ease it off some of the heavier topics. What is your favorite adventure to participate in? If there's one thing you look forward to doing when it comes to just getting out in nature and doing something crazy, what would it be?
Oh, I love climbing mountains.
Climbing mountains.
I always want to... Yeah, just climb it, you know. I kind of like trek, but I kind of, more than trek, I love climbing. So reaching new heights, not just like mountains, but even life just in, as an adventure. I want to, you know, have adventure in business, adventure in the projects that we do in these villages, you know. And so I just like a lot of adventure in life itself, basically. And so... yeah, challenges is something that I always love. And so I always take too much risk, go out of my comfort zone and just do adventure with my life, basically. So yeah, there's a lot of things I look forward to, you know, from doing a social business to climbing mountains to help these girls climb a mountain in this village. And so it's all fun. It's hard, but it's fun.
Well, that is so inspiring, Z. I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing, and I really appreciate you being on the podcast today. So thank you for joining.
Oh, my pleasure, Philip. Thanks for inviting me. And hope the listeners are, blessed and inspired. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, and to our listeners, what a reminder of the work that needs to be done. We hear from lots of different guests and lots of different situations, and the problem is large. There's really no getting around that. It's a big issue, and it's going to take a lot of people doing a lot of different approaches to fix it. And I'm incredibly inspired by Z's efforts and the work that he and their company is doing to bring change in Nepal, and they're seeing it. It may take time. It may take a generation, but they're seeing it, and I'm encouraged by that. So listeners, thank you for joining today. We appreciate you just staying tuned to the podcast. We encourage you to give us feedback. Let us know your thoughts, your questions. We want to hear from you, so feel free to comment or shoot us a message at info@threetreecoffee.com. And other than that, I'm your host, Philip Klayman, and we appreciate you helping us cultivate freedom.